Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Understanding the Eternal Nature, text number 26. Evam vidita tatvasya.
Evam vidita tatvasya.
Prakritir mayi manasam.
Prakritir mayi manasam.
Mudrito na pakuruta.
Yunyato na pakuruta.
Atmarama. The materialist tries to satisfy himself in relation body by constructing a skyscraper, where the devotee tries to satisfy the super self, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, by constructing the temple. Although both are engaged in dissociation material activities, the devotee is liberated and the materialist is conditioned. This is because the devotee who is constructing the temple has fixed his mind upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but the non-devotee who is constructing the skyscraper has his mind fixed in sense of gratification. Here, while performing any activity, even the material existence, when his mind is fixed upon the lotus feet of the Personality of Godhead, one will not be entangled or conditioned. The worker in devotional service in full Krishna consciousness is always independent of the influence of material nature. So the text again. Evam vidyutta tapasya prakritir mahimanasa yudhita napakuruta aparamasya karichit. The influence of material nature cannot harm an enlightened soul, even though he engages in material activities, because he knows the truth of the Absolute, and his mind is fixed on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Mom Vishnu Vraya Krishna Prasadaya Srimate Bhakti Gramata Swami Dhaname Namaste Saraswati Dei Sai Morabhani Vrtarame Srimate Shashvini Raj. Srila Prabhupada is talking to Professor Katowski at the University of Moscow. Prabhupada was trying to explain to him the difference between the body and the soul for Professor Katowski. Although he was the head of the Indology department, couldn't understand anything that Prabhupada was talking about. So then Prabhupada switched the conversation and talked about developing first-class men or women. And Professor Katowski couldn't understand anything that Prabhupada was talking about. And then Prabhupada said, can you give me a taxi? And Professor Katowski said, I can't do that either. He couldn't find a taxi for Prabhupada either. So, for a materialist, the philosophy of Krishna consciousness seems like a dream. That we're talking about, we're not the body, that we're a spiritual soul, and even beyond that, that there's actually a person who is God, with a complete definition of having complete or unlimited beauty and knowledge and strength, fame, renunciation, wealth. So for a materialist, this is a more or less a challenge, because they themselves are seeking to get more and more wealth, personal beauty, influence. They are more or less trying to compete with God, become God in their own small worlds. Therefore, when we say there's a very simple philosophy that we have free will, because that's always a philosophical point, how, if there's a God, can the living entity have free will? If he knows everything, as Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Vedaham Samatitani Vartmanani to Arjuna, Bhavishami to Bhutani, Mamtu Veda Nakashana. As the Supreme Personality of Godhead, I know everything that's happened in the past, everything happening right at the moment, and everything that's going to happen in the future. I also know all of the entities, but me, no one knows. So if God knows everything, past, present, and future, where is our free will? He knows that I'm going to do it before I do it. And he won't tell me because he doesn't want to spoil his perfect record knowing the future. Because otherwise I might do something different and spoil his past, present, and future. Because someone knows something, it doesn't mean that they're influencing. Just like you see a person walking down the street and he's about to walk over a cliff nearby. And you shout out, sir, if you keep on walking, you're going to fall over that cliff. So he turns around and says, oh, why do you keep on bothering me? Or as probably gives the example, a man is on a branch of a tree with a sword, and he's soaring the branch on these he's on the one side, he's soaring the branch on the side which is closest to the trunk of the tree. Someone walks by and says, "Sir, if you keep on soaring that branch, you're going to fall down. The branch is going to break, and you're going to fall down." "Oh, you and your philosophy, you know, just leave me alone, I don't believe you." So he keeps on soaring the branch, and eventually the branch breaks. He falls down, and the man runs after the person who warns him and says, Sir, can you tell me my future? You must be an astrologer." So God may have enough experience, but then again it says even Brahma understands past, present, future. Because although things seem very complicated to us, they're a lot simpler. People are doing the same thing over and over and over again. And if they're heading one direction and they keep on going that direction, they're going to wind up in the direction that they're going in. And since there's only so many directions you can go in, anyone who's seen all the directions knows more or less where you're going, where you're going to wind up. If someone goes in the direction of Adelaide, you say, "Sir, if you keep on going that direction, you're going to be in Adelaide." And you go, "Oh, you and your prophecies." "You think you're going to control me and tell me where I'm going to wind up?" So similarly, Prabhupada writes in the Srimad Bhagavatam that our free will consists in how we orientate our desire. Because after all, although we're imagining ourselves to be the creators of material nature, matter of fact, to such an extent, someone looks out through a telescope, sees a little dot in the sky, and suddenly the dot in the sky is named after him. It becomes his. Sorted. Supposedly sorted for the first time. Because now the person who sorted the telescope now took the proprietorship of the whole planet. So people are imagining just because we're observing something, it's ours. And therefore, because they're fixed in this desire to imagine themselves to be this body, and thinking everything that they're doing is they're doing it, they want to take the credit for it, everything that good has happened is because of themselves, and everything bad that's happened is because of others. So therefore, the idea that actually we're not this body, imagine you tell someone who's a multi-billionaire, just like Howard Hughes, when the devotees try to give him a Bhagavad Gita. He was living in a place called White Rock Lake Park, which every time I'm in Dallas, usually I go there for a walk. Prabhupada was there for his morning walk. And the devotees pointed out this mansion on the other side of the lake, where Howard Hughes, the wealthiest person in the world at that time, was living. And the devotees said, "We actually went to his residence, tried to sell him a Bhagavad Gita, or at least tried to give him a Bhagavad Gita. The guard stopped us at the gate and they said, 'We're sorry, no one can come in, but we'll give this book to Howard Hughes.'" So Prabhupada asked the devotees, "If you could have met Howard Hughes, what would you have told him?" So one devotee said, "I would have told him that we're model citizens, we're doing great work, maybe you should give us a donation." Another said that we're helping children, we have a gurukul here, maybe you can give us a donation. Another one said, "Chant Hare Krishna and they'll become happy," etc. And then Prabhupada said, "No, if I would have seen him, I would have said, 'My dear Howard Hughes, you've become very wealthy by your oil business, but actually the oil belongs to God, and you're stealing from God. And therefore one day God's agents will come, take you away and punish you. Therefore, give back the stolen property.'" And as mentioned in the little booklets by Sesh Rup Maharaj, one time Prabhupada was walking in Mayapur on the roof of the long building, and he was along with the walk, because Prabhupada sometimes would take his walk there. And there was a number of devotees, including life members. And one of the devotees introduced one life member to Srila Prabhupada and said, "This is Mr. Patel. He's a very wealthy businessman. He owns many businesses." Mr. Patel was dressed immaculately in white khadi with his Nehru hat. And he started to talk to Srila Prabhupada. And Prabhupada said, "Oh, very nice to meet you. What kind of businesses do you have?" So he said, "I make glass." "Oh, how nice. And where does glass come from?" "Oh, Swamiji, glass comes from sand." "Oh, and where does the sand come from?" So the man was a little pious. He said, "Oh, it comes from Bhagavan." And Prabhupada's eyebrows raised up and said, "Oh, so you're stealing from Bhagavan." So the man was a little embarrassed and he disappeared for the rest of the walk. But at the end of the walk, very enthusiastically, he came up to Srila Prabhupada again and said, Swamiji, I just wanted to know, I give in charity." So Prabhupada smiled at him and said, "Oh, so you're a little thief." And everyone laughed, including this businessman. So although we might want to claim proprietorship over what we think is our possessions, as I mentioned yesterday, I was reading in the Srimad Bhagavatam that Bali Maharaj was arrested by Vamanadeva. Because Bali Maharaj had promised Vamanadeva 3 steps of land. Vamanadeva had approached Bali Maharaj as a little boy, Brahmin, and at the time Bali Maharaj was giving charity to all the Brahmins. So he only asked for 3 steps of land. Sukracharya said, "Don't do it, he's Vishnu, he's tricky, he has a big foot." But he disregarded his so-called spiritual master, and he gave Vamanadeva 3 steps of land. But with his first step, he covered the whole universe. And then with his next step, even before stepping, he expanded his body into the rest of the universe. And then there was no place in the universe because he expanded everywhere for his third step. So Bali Maharaj offered his head as the third step. But Garuda came and arrested him, bound him with ropes, and when he was bound with ropes, Prahlad Maharaj came, his grandfather came, and his wife came also. And she chastised him, "You rascal." He goes, "You're a demon. You're thinking that you're offering to Vishnu some charity. But actually, he already owns everything. But because you're a demon, therefore you're thinking that you're giving something to Vishnu, who already owns everything." Of course, she asked Vamanadeva to release her husband. It wasn't that she was just getting on his case. In any case, the idea is that we may think we're giving charity, and therefore we deserve so much in return. But the demigods, Prabhupada mentions, they do everything, but they know that ultimately everything belongs to Vishnu. They don't do it with the idea that they need something in return. So similarly, if we understand things rightly, then we understand we're not the doer, we're not the proprietor, we're not the enjoyer, nor are we the benefactor of anyone. Ultimately, we become an instrument. The Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, "Kalosmi lokashe kriparido." Typical ways sannyasis are known to preach. Krishna preaches the same way. He warns Arjuna, because Arjuna asks him a question: "Why are you appearing in this feature, this uber rupa, this horrible feature? What is it all about?" So Krishna says, "I'm time. I come here to kill everyone." Heavy preaching, isn't it? Can't get any heavier than that. Who are you? Imagine this thing, you know, nowadays if someone walked into a temple and someone asks, you know, who are you? You say, well, I'm so-and-so, I came here to kill everyone. You see everyone ducking, you know, running out of the building. Well, that's what Krishna tells Arjuna. Kala smi lokeshe kriparido lokansa maharte hatparida iteki tvandami lo shantiyo sarve evasita pranukeshi yoda. Time I am the destroyer of all the worlds, and I've come here to destroy everything, everyone, except for you, the Pandavas. All the soldiers on both sides will be slain today or tomorrow. Actually, if they think the terrorists are ones who are threatening people and threatening to kill them, I think Krishna is the greatest of everything, and he's the greatest terrorist. Because he's killing everyone. Imperceptibly or perceptibly, everyone is being killed by Krishna in the form of time. And time is so powerful that no one can threaten time. There's nothing we can do about it. It's not that we wake up one morning, we read the newspaper, time grew so old, it grew old and died. Time doesn't diminish in its power, and it's, since time immemorial, it's constantly changing everything, because time is Krishna's energy. But Krishna tells Arjuna, it's all not so bad. It's all not negative. You're bad. They're bad. Everyone's bad. It's all bad. Let's all go together and jump off a cliff. The existentialist philosophy. Now, Krishna says that Tasmatva Mutishi Shola Vasva Jitvasha Trumbusra Rajam Samida Mayai Vutaniya Tampurva Meva Emitra Matram Bhavasava Sachin. Krishna tells Arjuna, just get up. Stop lamenting. Stop whatever you're doing. Get up and prepare to fight. After conquering your enemies, you'll enjoy a flourishing kingdom. There you're put to death by my arrangement, and you, O Savasachi, can be but an instrument in the fight. In other words, Krishna tells Arjuna, what can you do? You can become an instrument. You can fight for me, and therefore you'll be benefiting yourself. It will be benefiting everyone else. You can get them out of illusion and yourself out of illusion. Otherwise, you're simply wasting your time. Therefore, Prabhupada writes in Srimad Bhagavatam that our free will consists of either orientating our desires towards the ignorant misconception of misidentifying ourselves with the gross and subtle material bodies, and therefore engaging in material activities, or orientating our desires towards a true conception of being Krishna's eternal servant. It's simply our choice if we have the opportunity to make such a choice. That opportunity is rare in the material world. It's only amongst human beings. And it's rare even amongst human beings, only those who hear what Krishna has to say. And it's rarer amongst those who hear what Krishna has to say, because many people won't remember what Krishna had to say. And even those who can remember what Krishna had to say, it's still rare, because most people won't even accept what Krishna has to say. And even those who accept what Krishna has to say, it's still rare, because they may not do what Krishna wants them to do. They may not agree to it. So only when we have the opportunity to hear from Krishna or from his representatives, and then we try to deliberate on what Krishna wants us to do with the help of the super soul who supplies intelligence and knowledge to us, and when he makes it clear that we agree to do it, then we can act in such a way as to please Krishna. And what's the result of pleasing Krishna? Sometimes people think, well, I'm going to act for the big boss, and the result of serving the big boss, he's going to get fatter and fatter and fatter. I work like a dog, and he just gets fat. Now, what's the result of pleasing Krishna? Prabhupada explains that in the Bhagavad Gita. That when we actually accept that Krishna is the proprietor of everything, and that everything is meant for Krishna's service, then the next step is we find out what Krishna wants us to do. Just like Arjuna inquired from Krishna, what do you want me to do? So Prabhupada says, if one acts under the direction of Krishna and his book, as well as under the direction of Krishna's representatives, then we can find out what Krishna wants us to do. And when we find out what Krishna wants us to do, then we should do it to please Him. One should have no goal in life, save and accept, act in Krishna consciousness, just to satisfy Krishna. And while working such a way, one should think of Krishna only, that I've been appointed to discharge this particular duty by Krishna. Not my mother, not by my, you know, my maths teacher in school, not because my friends on the internet told me, on Facebook told me to do it. We do it because Krishna wants us to do it, because we're convinced this is Krishna's desire, because we've gone through in a humble way, an inquisitive way, through Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra, and the super soul within our heart confirms it, makes it clear that this is Krishna's desire. And we do that to please Him. What is the result? That one will naturally think about Krishna. That's the reward. Naturally, spontaneously thinking about Krishna, that's called spontaneous devotional service in Krishna consciousness. We may not be expert in anything, matter of fact, compared to Krishna, or expert in nothing. Compared to Krishna, we're all insignificant. We may be able to build a little bridge, but can we build a bridge to Lanka? Made out of stones that float on the water. So compared to Krishna, we're all insignificant, but we can do something to please Him with the energies that He's provided with us. We can agree to become His instrument. And therefore, when we do that, the reward is that we naturally think about Krishna. And Prabhupada writes, that is perfect Krishna consciousness. It is not so complicated that Krishna rewards us because we offered, as Prabhupada said, some halva, and it had fruit in it, some raisins, and Krishna just can't deny. He's so attached to fruit, halva, with raisins in it, that as soon as we offer it to Him, He surrenders. You're my guru. And Krishna's interested that we follow, we accept the process as He's given it to us. We accept the conceptions as He's given it to us, and therefore we perform devotional service with knowledge and Krishna consciousness. And then the result is that Krishna will make Himself available by help, by revealing Himself in our memory. We'll be able to see things as they are in Krishna consciousness. We'll be able to experience things they are as Krishna consciousness. We'll be able to experience closer Krishna as He really is. Otherwise, if we don't include Krishna in the picture, we don't include the conception that everything belongs to Krishna, and that I should find out what Krishna wants me to do with the energies that He's provided with me, that He's given me some influence over. If I don't agree to that, that's called whimsical. And such whimsical activities will not produce Krishna consciousness. Therefore, Prabhupada writes, that order of Krishna comes down in the simple succession from the bona fide spiritual master, and therefore the bona fide spiritual master's order should be taken as the prime duty of life. If one gets the bona fide spiritual master and acts according to his direction, then one's success in life and Krishna consciousness is guaranteed. So of course it doesn't mean just my Diksha Guru, his order is meaningful, and everyone else, while they may be giving the same instruction, they're useless. Such a conception will not be very favorable for our advancement in Krishna consciousness. That only my initiating spiritual master, his instructions are valuable, and even if God Himself comes, gives me an instruction because he didn't initiate me. I don't have to follow him. Now, such a conception will not be very pleasing either to Krishna or his devotees, and therefore it's very unlikely we'll make very much advancement in devotional service. Therefore, the conclusion is if we want to become actually conscious of Krishna, then we have to be agreed to become his instrument. And we have to find out what he wants us to do. It's not so complicated. Krishna is not trying to make it mysterious. He doesn't tell Arjuna, only to my very few devotees do I tell him what I want to do. Everyone else has to wander in the material world in confusion, looking, trying to search out what I want them to do. And maybe after a few hundred million lifetimes of Brahma, then I'll tell them. But Krishna comes in so many incarnations, he keeps on saying the same thing over and over again, and then people accuse him, why are you so repetitive? This philosophy is boring. They keep on saying the same thing over and over again. And when they don't say that, then they say, well, God doesn't tell us what to do. Wait a second, I just told you 500 million times what to do. But it's not what I want to do. You got it wrong. You got to tell me what I want to do. Otherwise, you don't understand me, and therefore you couldn't be God. If you're God, you should be able to understand me. But since you don't understand me, you're asking me to do things that aren't part of my nature, and therefore you must be wrong. So keep on repeating until you finally get it right. And Krishna makes it very simple. He gives us the background of being a spirit soul, of how the modes of material nature work, how we become entangled, and how we should find out what he wants us to do, and especially for the same ministry that he's had since time immemorial. He says, Paritranai sadhunam, vinashaya jiniskritam, dharma samstapanartaya, sambhavami yuge yuge. So we can't think, oh, Krishna, that's his thing. He comes to protect the pious, including the religious miscreants, to reestablish religious principles. So he has this, you know, this attachment. He's like fanatical about these things. But I'm a little bit more balanced. No, we want to actually be dovetailed with Krishna. We want to become in harmony with Krishna. We have to take up the same mission he has. Of course, we're not kshatriyas. We're not going to go out in the street and vanquish the demons. Not at least physically. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has come just so that we don't get him to make a mistake and go out there with sword and shield, start fighting the demons. Now he comes to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and says, Yari deka tari kaha Krishna upadesh amar aga guruhana tari desh. Whoever we meet, you tell them about Krishna. So that's how we protect the pious. That's how we reestablish religious principles. And by such philosophy, we destroy the demoniac conceptions that are being so readily distributed in Kali Yuga. That way we defeat the demons. Not physically, by spreading the Krishna conscious philosophy. Prabhupada said the demons are already defeated. Threefold miseries, you're inflicting so much misery upon them that the person's tottering, they still have to fall over, and you come over and just tap him. He falls over and then he takes the credit for beating him in a heavy match. So the demons already defeated themselves, but we try to enlighten everyone, including the demons, so the demoniac conceptions are dissipated. There is no God, or that everyone is God, or that we're here to enjoy, and that the only happiness is through sense gratification. So, that there is no higher pleasure coming from serving God. So these conceptions we defeat by spreading Krishna consciousness. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions, comments? Yes.
Thanks for your time, Maharaj. You started by saying that we have free will, and you didn't elaborate on how actually Krishna knows that we know everything. So how do we present that to people when they ask, well, if Krishna knows everything, what is the point of free will?
Well, just like the government knows that there will be criminals. Therefore, they create a prison department, a legal system. They also know that people want to be educated, so they create an educational department. They don't advertise that people take a vacation in the jail, but they know there's going to be criminals. Although they warn people and they try and educate them to do something moral and trustworthy and in harmony with the laws of the government, still there's going to be criminals.
What about the point that actually, I've heard it said that the only thing that Krishna really is looking for is the point of time when your free will chooses to surrender to him. Does he also know that exact time that you're going to surrender to him?
Well, I said maybe. But that doesn't mean he's influencing him. You know, just like a person, he's been running a race, he's getting tired and tired and tired, he's just about to collapse. He said, I think he's going to collapse. It's not that you cause him to run the race or collapse. But you look at him, he's just, you know, he's just run 25 miles, he's panting, he's breathing, he can't do anything. You know he's going to collapse. Anything else? Yes.
Yeah. I can't see that last one. Thanks for the talk. Now, it's got a question, sort of along the lines of free will, I suppose. But when people ask you, Prabhupada, about, like, how did we actually get here? You know, he didn't really kind of go into detail how does the soul actually leave spiritual come here. But he did mention that they're in living entities like all of us. There's that desire to enjoy separately, which is why, you know, a being would be in the material world. That I understand. Separate enjoyment, or I am the enjoyer. So, in the mentality, that would belong to God, according to the scriptures, that we're trying to enjoy ourselves. I guess my question is that if the living entity, in one sense, is choosing, I want to be an enjoyer, right? So, okay, Krishna goes, okay, fine. Here's a pretend world for you, a pretend world where you can pretend to be the doing animals. They're completely wrapped up, they don't have a clue what they're doing, but they're still suffering, sometimes all kinds of misery. I guess my question is really that the material is a pretty tough place. When you look at it, really, you've got to do a lot of good to get to the pleasure realms, but it's very easy to slip down to the bad ones. And I just kind of feel like it's kind of like it's a pretty tough lesson to wrap
you
beings
don't like,
up.
You don't like so Krishna's, totally. You don't like Krishna's justice.
I feel like it's pretty
you
tough.
You got to tell it to the
it's
judge.
It's pretty tough, because an animal doesn't...
But from our point of view, what do we know about the justice system?
I mean,
just like nowadays, they're killing millions and billions of cows. It's pretty tough on the cows, isn't it?
Yeah.
But so, you don't think there should be some justice for the people who are killing so many cows?
I think it's difficult. Yeah, I think there should be justice. But so I guess my point is that the animals, for example, or lower ghostly hell beings, are so wrapped up in that suffering that they haven't even got free will anymore. They're just in pain. So it's not, they can't learn anything when they're there.
How do you know they're not learning anything?
I don't know. What is the same scripture from?
But they are learning something from the scripture. It's like if you're a tree, you're standing there naked for 5,000 years, you're learning tolerance. You know, we may think it's a very heavy lesson, but then we're very slow learners. And to get that body to the tree took a lot of effort. It means you have to do a lot of simple activities. Kali Yuga is especially a great time to get a lower body, lower species of life. Because people amass so many simple activities in such a short period of time that they become eligible. But then again, one may think, oh, this is very unfair. But actually, it's quite merciful. Because, first of all, you're restrained from doing even more simple activities you would have done before. If you would have had an opportunity to do more simple activities, you would have harmed more living entities. So therefore, you're put in a condition of restraining. You can learn tolerance, and at the same time, you're not such a menace to everyone.
I'm interested in concept. Just something to think about.
Yes, thanks.
Especially the whole world. But thank you very much.
And not only that, you get a body of an animal, you're actually in a much better position than a human being who's acting like an animal. Just like, for instance, if you want to eat meat and you become a tiger, then it's a lot better for a tiger. First of all, you don't get any more simple activities for killing the animal. Number two, You don't have to go out and work to pay, you know, to buy the animal, dead animal. You don't have to cook it. You don't have to serve it. You don't have to transport it. You don't have to hear, you know, you don't get disturbed when you hear its screams or anything else. You don't have to worry about whether it's organic or not. So it's much better. You become a tiger, you don't have to go 20 years of education so you become eligible. You get a job so you can buy the meat.
I see the point. But their desires are being fulfilled. That's the kind of desires they have. So it's just like, okay, fine, you have meat eating desires, be humble. I'm going to choose it.
Anything else? Yes.
She's saying that devotional service is important in their fasting and Krishna consciousness. Krishna had the opulence of having all the balance of nutrition and gave direct instruction to Krishna to fight. Some of us haven't got that, not in the position of going to a spiritual master asking what service should we perform. So what do we do in that situation?
Well, Prabhupada writes, as I said, the one follows Krishna's instruction in this book, as well as the guidance of the representative of Krishna, then the result will be the same. Krishna not only tells us what to do, but he tells us how to do it. As far as what to do, in our present body, we only have a very limited realm of possibilities. We're not going to go, we don't have to go on the battlefield Kurukshetra right now and figure out whether I should fight or not. It's more or less. Our main thing is, should I go upstairs and take prasadam or not? And we get up and we think about it, you know, and Bhagavad Gita says, Krishna says, patram bhujvam balam doyam, that we should offer our food to Krishna, and we do that, and then Krishna says, you can eat it. So we think, this is all authorized. I offer my food, I can eat it, so we can do that. I mean, in terms of what we can do, generally, most of us are not kshatriyas, or we don't have brahminical prowess, we don't even have the ability to farm. The process is we should engage in the Sankirtan movement. That's our main business. If we're able to preach, we should tell others about Krishna, explain how Krishna is God, how who we are, and how, the material, how we can get out of our material existence. If we have some ability to manage, we should take up some responsibility to help manage the preaching in some way. Or the deity worship. If we have some resources, we should engage them in Krishna service to spread the Krishna consciousness movement, make our home into a temple. And if we have no talents or no resources, we should assist those who do have talents and resources. And after all, Prabhupada writes, at the end we should hear and chant about Krishna, try to understand how to do whatever we're doing, how to do it better in Krishna consciousness.
I mean, the reason why I'm asking these questions is because a lot of the spiritual masters are older than the disciples. So more than likely the spiritual masters are going to leave the planet
for all the disciples. So Krishna doesn't leave.
No, of course not.
And he's in everyone's heart. So who's Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said all of us would become qualified to become spiritual masters and tell others the message of Krishna. Understand and tell others the message of Krishna. So it's not a few devotees. Are authorized to become guru. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said everyone should become guru and spread his message. And the effectiveness won't be according to our position, but be according to our realization. Yes?
You spoke about the Pala form of Krishna, and Krishna had shown that form to Arjuna, and we know that Arjuna was known to be a fearless warrior, but notwithstanding that he was so fearless, he still got frightened, you know, by looking at that form. So how to understand?
Do you really want to understand? It's like Markandeya Rishi, when Lord Vishnu was leaving, he had this thought, my dear Lord Vishnu, please let me know what your mind is like. And then within a short period of time, Lord Vishnu created the time of annihilation for Markandeya Rishi. And he wound up in the ocean of devastation for millions of years. So a little as they say, curiosity kills the cat. So if you really sincerely want to find out what the fear that Arjuna was experiencing, I'm sure Krishna will rain it to you. Thank you very much. Congratulations. Bhagavatam. Kijaya. Kijaya.